glad you could make it. Thanks for tuning in, etc., 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 etc. This hour is sponsored by Ernest Haker. Thanks, Ernest. His message. Mike, thank you for acknowledging Carmen last May. He loved hearing his name on the radio. He has passed now, but would be pleased with the current Occupy energy. Ernie in New Mexico. Thanks for the sponsorship. I don't know if you're ready for this, Truth Seeker. I don't know if I'm ready for this. But the most important piece of news was released yesterday. The most important piece of news this week, this month, this year. Possibly in human history. Ooh, hyperbole. And we're only a minute into the program. Yesterday, it was released by the Global Carbon Project. It was in the New York Times today, I believe. It wasn't on page one. But the Global Carbon Project showed that carbon emissions from our planet had increased almost 6% between 2009 and 2010. In fact, as Bill McKibben, who the environmentalist who was arrested for protesting the Keystone XL pipeline, as McKibben points out, it was arguably among the most important piece of data in the last three centuries. Since, according to the New York Times, this information represents almost certainly the largest absolute jump in any year since the Industrial Revolution. Now, what does it mean? According to Republicans and the crazy people who determine the memes and the discussion points in this country anyway, it means nothing. Absolutely nothing. But what it means in scientific or climate terms is that we've all but lost the battle to reduce the damage from global warming. The planet has already warmed about a degree Celsius. It's clearly going to go well past 2 degrees. It means in political terms that the fossil fuel industry has delayed effective action for the past 12 years since the Kyoto Treaty was signed. It means in diplomatic terms that the endless talks underway in Durban, South Africa should be more important than ever. They should be the focus of a planetary population desperate to figure out how it's going to survive this century. But instead, almost no one's paying any attention to any of this. As McKibben points out, and you don't need Bill McKibben to tell you this, one of our political parties has decided that global warming is a hoax. It's just not real. It's just not happening. Its two leading candidates in the Republican Party are busily apologizing for anything they said in the past that might possibly have been construed as backing, you know, science. Obama? He hasn't spoken on the Durban talks yet. And international observers are beginning to realize that he really effectively never will. Who are the 99% in this country? They're those of us who aren't making any of these deadly decisions. And in this world, they're the vast majority of people who didn't contribute to these soaring emissions. And in this biosphere, the 99% is every other living species now living on a disorienting Earth. You think Occupy Wall Street is radical? You think McKibben's 350.org website was radical for helping to organize those mass civil disobediences in D.C. back in August against the Keystone Pipeline? They're not radical. This is radical. Radicals work for the oil pipeline companies. They work for the oil companies. They work for the coal industry. The CEO of Exxon, here's one example, gets up every morning and goes to work changing the chemical composition of the atmosphere. Son of a bitch, really? Really? No one has ever done anything as radical as that. Certainly not Occupy Wall Street. Certainly not 350.org. Nobody, I mean, come on. The CEO of Exxon, every morning, gets up and continues policies that oh my God, changes the chemical composition of the atmosphere. And he and his slimy, filthy, death-dealing ilk make sure that they spend enough money on political campaigns so that no one stops them. No one. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce gave more money than the DNC and the RNC last cycle, and 94% of the money from the Chamber of Commerce went to the climate change deniers. You might say that corporate power has occupied the atmosphere. Now, the Times article, by the way, the Global Carbon Project is a completely useless organization. It's an international collaboration of scientists who keep track of these numbers. So to the Republicans and to the majority of people in this country, honest to Christ, I mean, hear this. These guys don't know what they're talking about. It's all malarkey. It's all political crap. It's the liberals trying to destroy our glorious economy. That's what Limbaugh has been saying for 20 years. Somebody ought to do... Yeah. Scientists with this group, the Global Carbon Project, said the increase, a half billion extra tons of carbon pumped into the air, was the largest absolute jump in any year since the Industrial Revolution. And according to the New York Times, the researchers said this rate, these emissions, this ever-rising emission trend, are reaching the point the scientists fear will make it difficult, if not impossible, to forestall severe climate change in coming decades. I won't be here to see it. My kids and grandkids will. And maybe you won't be here to see it either, but your kids and nieces and nephews and grandchildren will. This is astonishing. It's just astonishing. Glenn Peters, researcher for the Center for International Climate and Environmental Research in Oslo, Norway, said, quote, each year that emissions go up, there's another year of negotiations, another year of indecision. And there's no evidence that this trajectory that we've been following for the last 10 years is going to change. It's just not going to change. Scientists say this rapid growth of emissions is not only warming the earth and threatening the ecology of this planet, but also putting human welfare at long-term risk. And we're not going to do anything about it. Nobody is. The biggest offenders, well, on a national level, the biggest offenders right now, of course, is China, India. Individually, the biggest offenders are people who live in the so-called industrialized capitalist nations. I don't know. It just seems like, you know, we should hold awake, or we should cry, or we should rend our garments, or I don't know. But we're not going to do anything. I do not know from my heart and from my hand. Why don't people understand my end?
not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
You know, these numbers indicate that emissions from the so-called wealthier countries have made moving towards stabilization in recent years. But as was pointed out in this report, it's only because the so-called rich countries have simply exported their industries. So the emissions now flow from the poor countries. Capitalism destroys everything. Every single thing. I still get emails from people who just don't get that. They want to call me a son of a bitch and an MF-er and you know, condemn my family to a slow death, not knowing in the least what they're talking about. But capitalism does this. Capitalism is the only economic system that I can think of, predatory capitalism, that is willing to destroy everything for the sake of profit. Now, you needn't send me an email and say, well, what about when the wall came down, we found out that the countries in Eastern Europe under Soviet domination all those years had left a foul, stinking area the size of half of Europe with their pollution. Well, you got to understand something. Even though those were planned economies run by communists, it was also a capitalist venture. The whole thing. Capitalism is the exploitation of human labor, among other things, for the sake of the people who control the flow of capital, among other things. So the destruction that has occurred is ongoing, and I guess the part that is so upsetting to me is that I'm part of a species on this planet. Not the dominant species. We think we're the dominant species, but the dominant species are the microbes. I mean, that's impossible for us to accept, but that's the truth. But here we are, one of the species on this planet that has evolved to the point where we have the power and are exercising that power to destroy everything and have somehow made a decision. Or a decision's been made for us not to respond to this greatest possible tragedy in terms of human life staring us right in the face. And the Republican Party in this country and the right wingers who are willing to not just deny the science for themselves, but to insist through their media outlets. Oh, and I have something to say about media outlets coming up here in a little while. They insist through their right-wing media outlets that there's no problem at all. And they repeat it every day, 24/7, on hundreds upon hundreds of radio stations by the same five or six voices. But it's been repeated this way for 10, 15, 20 years over and over and over again. That global climate change, global warming, the destruction of that little thin envelope that we breathe in is ongoing. And their attitude, their answer to that, no, it's not. But the science says that, no, it's not. Look, we found a memo. These guys were lying. Well, no, you didn't. You didn't find anything of the sort, but that's what you told your listeners and your viewers and your readers. Reminds me of that movie on the beach when the wave of radiation was moving toward Australia, the last place on Earth where there was human life. And, well, the book and the movie. And the people in Australia could do nothing but wait. Everybody else on the earth was dead. And the people in Australia could only wait while this cloud of radioactivity slowly moved from the northern hemisphere to the southern, bringing with it absolute human annihilation. Total and complete. And I've said before on this program, that movie just shook me to my foundation when I saw, I was only about 20 years old, I think 19 or 20, maybe 18. And it just like, oh my God, it was at the height of the Cold War between the U.S. and the Soviets. I thought something like that will never happen. It'll never happen. No. Something worse. So I, you know, I feel like one of the characters in that movie who are absolutely powerless at this point to do anything. I don't know. Kind of bizarre. We'll be right back.
It's hot in December, cold in July. When it rains, it pours out of a poisonous sky. In California, the body counts keep getting higher. It's evil out there, man. That state is always on fire. Everyone has a system, but they can't seem to win. Even Bob Geldof looks alarmingly thin. I've got to get on that shuttle, get me out of this place. But there's gonna be warfare up there in outer space. It's been a hard day on the planet. How much is it all worth? Getting harder to understand it.
Substance, no abuse.
25 before the hour. This hour is sponsored by Ernest Haker. Hi, Ernest. He has a message. Mike, thank you for acknowledging Carmen last May. He loved hearing his name on the radio. He's passed away now, but would be pleased with the current Occupy energy. Ernie in Wagon Mound, New Mexico. Thanks, Ernie. And sorry to hear about Carmen. Now, there is a solution to all this. Prairie 2 has a solution for the horrific news released by the climatologists over the weekend. Prairie 2 writes, or Bruce, I don't know why I call him Prairie 2. Bruce writes, the 1% have a survival plan for themselves. It revolves around simple science. If the 99% sit in the cold and dark with little to eat, the global warming problem is solved. If they don't like that solution and rebel, the burning cities will produce enough soot to dim the sunlight and suppress the global warming for decades. The reduced population won't produce so much CO2, and the problem solved. Well, logically, that is very true. That's absolutely true. So apparently, I guess what Bruce is telling us is that the 1% already have thought this through. And they have a solution for them. Well, as long as we're talking about Bruce, his missive tonight. Ever wonder just how the Republicans destroyed the economy? Here's some numbers. It seems a mystery as to why the economy is so sluggish, other than the Republicans like it that way. But there are actual numbers available not to show how they are doing it. Or there are some numbers available now to show how they're doing it. First, the history. We were really destined to drop into a really serious depression after Reagan's massive tax cuts and the huge downward pressure on wages that he created. The stock market crash in the 80s and the collapse of commercial real estate after the SNL looting nearly did us in. But Reagan held it all at bay by spending trillions of borrowed dollars. Money borrowed from the very same rich people who were no longer paying taxes. It's what conservatives like to call wealth transfer. Except when it's going from the poor and the middle class to the already wealthy, then it's called fiscal conservatism. The reason we didn't have the Republican Great Depression in the 90s was that Alan Greenspan set about creating a series of bubbles. Dot-coms and such crap as that, Clinton raising taxes, all that helped, but that wasn't really enough. Then Greenspan and George W. Bush created the housing bubble. Greenspan made the cash available, and Bush killed all the regulations on lending. This scheme also took advantage of so-called investment deregulation and modernization done by the Republicans under Bill Clinton's signature. That was Glass-Steagall. This allowed them to securitize the debt that was created so that they could bilk investors on the debt itself and sell derivatives that allowed the banks to bet against their own securities. This wasn't the only thing they were doing, but it is relevant to this point. We really need about an $18 trillion a year GDP just to maintain our middle class based economy. Under Bush, this was achieved with $14 trillion in actual GDP plus another $4 trillion a year in new consumer debt for an effective $18 trillion GDP. Currently, this debt is being deleveraged, either paid down or defaulted on, at about $2 trillion a year. So instead of an $18 trillion economy, we now have a $14 trillion minus $2 trillion, or a $12 trillion economy. This is what has created 14 million permanently unemployed people. This economic strategy works just fine for everybody, except the 99.9% who are being screwed. To get the debt down to a point where the economy stabilizes at this rate will take about 10 years. Now, this doesn't take into account anything else the Republicans might do. The austerity they've been pushing at the state and local levels is just making it all the worse, of course. If they're able to do that at the federal level, things will go downhill fast. Speaking of things going downhill, the number of students receiving subsidized lunches rose to 21 million last school year from 18 million in 2006 and 7, a 17% increase in the USDA Meals program. 11 states, including Florida, Nevada, New Jersey, and Tennessee, had four-year increases of 25% or more of students getting subsidized lunches. Over the previous 30 years, as we saw the gradual decline of the middle class, the program had only incremental growth from year to year. These new numbers are only for the last school year ending in June and don't reflect the worsening situation this fall. So even as some Americans are going back to work, their wages are being cut drastically. And this also cuts into the GDP, as 70% of the economy is consumer spending. Traditionally, when consumer spending lags, the government steps in to make up the difference. Even in ancient times, if there was an excess of beggars outside the castle, the king would launch some sort of building project to put coin of the realm into circulation, or just start a war if he was a conservative king. We are currently in the midst of a war with a slight twist. I mean, besides the ones overseas, the rich are making war on the rest of us, to loot and pillage the wealth still owned by the 99.9%. We were supposed to be distracted by the endless war on terror, but people have started to notice. The Republicans think it might work for them to start a war with Iran to keep us busy, in the sense of, we've always been at war with South Asia. Prairie2.com. Another lighthearted, uplifting report from our economics affairs correspondent. And I saw a piece that has to do, is in Detroit Free Press, has to do with just folks in Michigan. Unless Congress acts to continue the extended unemployment benefits, nearly 160,000 residents of Michigan are going to see everything cut off, everything. An end to these extended benefits would immediately impact 61,000 state residents who are getting this federal aid after exhausting their 26 weeks of state-funded assistance. And another 100,000 who are receiving state benefits would no longer get additional help if they're still jobless after 26 weeks. So there you go. 160,000 people in just Michigan. Now, this is part of the, I would agree with Prairie too here, part of the 1% plan. Because when these kinds of programs are cut off because of this phony fiscal responsibility horse crap that the Republicans are talking about, who are they going to blame? Are they going to blame their own member of Congress? Of course not. They're going to blame their governor? Of course not. They're going to blame Obama. Of course. It's his fault. And this is what the Republicans want. This is what the fascists want. This is what the capitalists, the corporatists want. Blame Obama. Get him out of there. Get the Democrats out of control of the Senate. Bring the Republicans in. Hip, hip, hooray. Now, there are people who monitor this program, Republicans, conservatives, who are crazy. They really are. They listen to this program. You heard that song, bitch. And these people honestly believe that the solution to the mess that they are in is to put in place a Republican president, Republican Senate, Republican House. And I realize it's nose-cutting despite face, but on the other hand, I would love to see it happen. I don't know if we would survive it, and I hate to think of this country devolving into open rebellion and revolt because people can't eat or can't feed themselves or can't get a job or, you know, when you finally reach that point, and it's very hard for most Americans to believe this because you look around, everything seems normal. Except for the fact that, you know, you notice repossessed or bank foreclosed houses in your neighborhood, and you hear of more and more people who are leaving because there's no work. But Republicans seem to think, the rank and file seem to think that by putting these predators in office, that somehow they, the voters, will be immune from the destruction. And this is the part, you know, the real bastard in me just wants to see it happen one time. Wants to see the Republicans just have the wind kicked out of them based on their ignorance and their voting patterns. Well, I realize it's already started to happen, but these stupid, stupid fools are still blaming, you know, the liberal media. Obama, the socialist. So, one way to really clear the decks and make way for fundamental change in this country, and God, we hope it would come nonviolently, don't we? Would be to go ahead and let the country go total right wing and see what happens.
Sponsored by Ernest Haker. This message, thanks, Mike, for acknowledging Carmen last May. He loved hearing his name on the radio. He's passed away now, but would be pleased with the current Occupy energy. Signed, Ernie in New Mexico. Thanks, Ernie. Appreciate the sponsorship. One thing that has dropped pretty much off the radar in this country is the disaster, the ongoing disaster that continues at Fukushima, Japan. The last thing I read the other day, I don't think it was on the front page of anything, but was it thousands, millions, or billions of gallons, liters, cubic feet, something, of highly radioactive water from these damaged, totally broken reactors is seeping into the ocean
and there's nothing stopping it, and into the earth at in Japan, into the groundwater there, into the ecosystem. But just is it what is it? Maybe Michael and Roswell will let me know. Is it thousands, millions of gallons just of highly radioactive water just pouring into the ocean?
Kind of like an oil spill.
Yeah, kind of like an oil spill. Only different. Real different. So I get an email here from GR, from Gil. It's pretty bleak. Regarding On the Beach, the movie or the book On the Beach. Hi, Mike. Our movie is Fukushima. It is still radiating the air, water, and soil. It is everywhere, including Australia. According to Helen Caldicott and others, millions are going to die. DNA is going to be changed for future generations, and the entire planet will be poisoned for thousands of years. The planet is dying. Fukushima is radiating, and the economy is collapsing. Will our species survive? Not with significant numbers and not in a civilized manner. Big picture? No hope. Gil. Jeez, Gil. I mean, it's bad enough to talk about this report on global climate change, but whoosh. Big picture, no hope. Ah! You know, I'm sure most of the people who listen to this program are familiar with science fiction or disaster movies or disaster movies on a global scale. What was the one recently, Kathy, with the tectonic, or the crust of the earth was shifting and they had built those four big...
Oh, that was so stupid.
Yeah, I know, it was very stupid. What was it? 2012, is that it? Okay, right. It was a very stupid movie. But I've seen it twice now on late night television, and I just sit there and I'm just transfixed by it.
I feel so sorry.
You what? Say it again.
I just felt sorry for John Smith.
You know, I don't think you're coming through. You're not coming through here. Try it again.
Hear me now?
Now I can hear you.
Nope.
Oh, well, that's all right. You feel sorry for John Cusack and the people who made the movie.
Woody Harrelson.
Oh, was he in that? All I know is it. When I see those movies, you know, those apocalyptic... Well, all right, The Road is another good example. You know, I just sit there and I look at films like this. I remember back when I was a kid, we had apocalyptic movies, but they were about invaders from outer space. Nothing here on Earth. Oh, God, no. And those invaders from space movies were all propaganda films that were designed to make us acutely aware of the threat of alien communism, alien godless communism. You know, it was to show us how the capitalists would defeat the invasion, no matter how severe, no matter how massive it was. But recent apocalyptic movies or articles or books or tales or whatever, they're just so unnerving because the really big crises that are facing this planet, it's not new. It's not, we look into a telescope and eek, here comes an asteroid. I mean, this is something that we've been fully aware of. The scientists have been fully aware of for such a long time. The global population changes, the global weather changes, the horrific danger of using nuclear reactors for anything. I mean, Jesus God, nuclear energy was developed to kill and destroy. And okay. So it did. It killed 300,000 people immediately, or 250,000 in Japan, and continued to kill, you know, for decades. There is no good. There is zero good in anything nuclear. It's that, you know, that place where human beings shouldn't go here. You know, it's that kind of thing. Ah. Okay, we're going to take a break and we'll come back. And I'm once again upset at an action by one of our affiliates. And I'm going to let you know what the action is and how it is going to affect this program when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Here before I get to this this thing that pertains to me, regarding what's going on at Fukushima, Bruce writes in, nobody knows how many millions of gallons of contaminated water are going into the ocean or how badly the water is contaminated. Computer simulations just released by the power company indicate that the disaster was many times worse than they have admitted to. So far, these simulations are probably nowhere near the reality of what is going on. The China syndrome is probably still continuing. If the molten mass under one of these meltdowns reaches groundwater, remember they're at sea level, a massive steam explosion would result catapulting the amount of so-called stable radioactive material into the air, rivaling a major nuclear exchange. The material is stable, quote, quote, in the sense that it won't go away for thousands of years, as opposed to the bulk of the fallout from a nuclear bomb explosion that degrades in only weeks. So between Bruce Enberg and Dr. Helen Caldicott, don't pay any attention to this stuff. Look over there. Look somewhere else. And I got this from the Jet Fixer. The Discovery Channel is refusing to show the shocking conclusion of its own documentary, Frozen Planet. Is a seven-part series that serves as a gripping portrait of life at the ends of the Earth, featuring stunning shots of wildlife at the North and South Poles. But when the series airs in the U.S. early next year, Discovery Channel is only showing six episodes. They're refusing to air the full seventh episode, which deals exclusively with climate change and exposing its devastating effects on our planet. Now, there is a petition started at change.org asking the Discovery Channel to air all seven episodes of Frozen Planet to make sure Americans can see the truth about climate change. And then there's this. Why is this petition important? The Discovery Channel has chosen not to air the full final episode of the much-anticipated Frozen Planet series, written and produced by the same people that brought us Blue Planet and Planet Earth, two staggeringly beautiful documentary series on the marvel that is our planet. The subject of the final series is global warming and climate change, and reflects on some effects of human impact on the natural world. My friend David Bailey of Wildcat Films, who worked as a cameraman on Frozen Planet, told me, quote, "Over a five-year period, I made five trips to Antarctica and one to the Arctic. In every location, we saw and filmed clear evidence of retreating glaciers, disappearing permanent ice sheets, and atypical weather patterns. We also had the privilege of working alongside scientists who now have years of incontrovertible evidence of a growing and catastrophic warming at both poles. Many of these scientists were funded by the U.S. National Science Foundation, so it seems perverse that the Discovery Channel is effectively censoring scientific research funded by the U.S. taxpayer." End quote. Discovery Channel prides itself on revealing the mysteries and unseen worlds of our planet. The climate change episode has the potential to move a lot of people from one of the leading nations in global emissions toward greater stewardship of this precious Earth. This move acts in defiance of Discovery Channel's original aims, which was to inspire the public about the world around them. The American public has a right to be inspired. Please air the final episode of the Frozen Planet series. Now, what I just read to you is the petition itself. And if you want to go to change.org and do a search on their petitions, search engine, Discovery Channel, and you will probably find it. That's pretty scary, huh? Or not. Which makes what I'm about to say just really kind of insignificant. We have been on Green 960 in San Francisco for a number of years, but as of January 4th, I and two or three other liberal programs, most of their liberal programming is going to be kicked to the street. Green 960 is changing its call letters to what? KNEW? And they're going all right wing. Now, this has happened to us many times. It happened recently by the same corporate entity in Madison, Wisconsin. It has happened so many times in my 25 years of doing radio as to render the conversation just kind of stupid. But you have to keep in mind, Clear Channel is owned by Bain Capital LLC. That is the Boston-based private equity firm founded in 1984 by Mitt Romney and his partners. They purchased Clear Channel in a leveraged buyout a couple of years ago. One of the reasons this is happening is to remove liberal or left voices from the airwaves permanently. Now, I've gone through an awful lot of crap with right-wingers over the years when they say, well, you're only on 30 stations. Rush is on 700. There's a reason for that. And the reason for it is the manipulation of the marketplace by these monstrous conglomerates like Clear Channel that at one time, I think, owned, what, Kathy, 1,700 radio stations or something like that? What do I have here in front of me? Well, let me share this with you first. Emmy award-winning former LA TV news producer Sue Wilson, who's an occasional guest contributor on media issues at Bradblog. Bradblog.com, by the way, they're the ones who broke the story on this. I had the information a month or so ago. But was asked not to say anything, and under the fear of being kicked off the air on Green 960 earlier than the last minute, because this has happened to me before, too, trust me, I just decided to hell with it, to hell with Green 960, to hell with Clear Channel, to hell with Bain Capital, to hell with them, and just kept doing the program. But Sue Wilson, whose documentary film Broadcast Blues focuses on, among other things, the dangers of Clear Channel's dominance in the radio market following the passage of the Telecommunications Act, noted yet another change by the company over the weekend. In Sacramento, California state capital, very progressive California, where there's been no progressive AM talk station on the public airwaves there for years, more right-wing radio was quietly added to the airwaves in Sacramento. On a Facebook page, she charges, that's linked from her FCC watchdog website, ourpublicairwaves.com, she charges that last Wednesday, the company, quote, pulled a fast one on its listeners in Sacramento, end quote, by replacing an FM rock station with simulcast programming from talk station KFBK, the station which launched and still carries right-wing talker Rush Limbaugh. Ms. Wilson writes that the move, quote, means that hard right-wing talk will fill yet another 50,000 watts of our public airwaves in the Sacramento region, ranging from Lake Tahoe to Santa Rosa. It means our region now gets four stations promoting pro-corporate, conservative hate speech, but zero stations promoting any opposing ideas, end quote. She says that this means, quote, that Limbaugh can tell millions that Occupy Wall Street protesters are pure, genuine parasites, as he has, and smug, stupid idiots, as he has, whose parents will need to housebreak him all over again, as he has, while Sean Hannity defends the UC Davis cops' use of pepper spray and tell millions that Occupy protesters are lunatics of the left wing, as he has, while at the same time on KFBK's sister station, KSTE right-winger Michael Savage calls occupiers vermin. And as Ms. Wilson says, there's nobody there to counter this propaganda. Conservative talk radio supporters will tell us that this is all about free speech, and if we don't like it, we should just change the channel. Well, they're right, Wilson says. It is about free speech, our free speech. Where is our opportunity to get an alternative message out to our community on our public airwaves? There's more. Stick around. I'll be surprised if we're still on Green 960 even as I speak. In 2008, Bain Capital LLC, founded by and currently one of the owners, Mitt Romney, purchased Clear Channel's conglomerate in a leveraged buyout. Clear Channel's removal, I think this is from Brad Friedman's website, Clear Channel's removal of progressive talk from San Francisco's airwaves at the beginning of a presidential election year, when Romney is seen by many to be the GOP's likely nominee, is bound to raise eyebrows and renew progressive concerns about media consolidation under the 1996 Telecom Act. But that's going to go nowhere. Obviously, I've been through this before. When was it, Kathy, when Bush first ran? When was that? In 90, around 2000? When was it? Because remember, we were working for that little rinky-dink network that was owned by the UAW. And all of a sudden, station after station after station dropped. And then when we worked at Air America, the same thing happened at the beginning of election cycles. This is what these sons of bitches do. Clear Channel is notorious, and they've gotten even worse now that they're part of Bain Capital, for absolutely choking off any kind of balanced discussion on their stations. I remember when their station in Madison decided to drop us and put us in at 3 o'clock in the morning, And we put on our website the fact they were going to do that and said, you know, if you don't like it, you should let the program director there know. Well, he got his ass in an uproar about 10 minutes after we put that up and pretty much threatened to use his position with Clear Channel if we didn't take it off our website to get other stations to drop us. So this has been going on for a number of years, and you need to know about this. I don't know if the other so-called progressive or liberal talk show hosts are going to say a word about this. Maybe, maybe not. And you know, the chance for retaliation by Clear Channel here is pretty strong, because I'm not supposed to be saying any of this. I'm supposed to go along with the BS story that has been out there for 20 years now that the public doesn't want progressive radio, which is a lie. I'll tell you who doesn't want progressive radio. The corporate advertisers don't want progressive radio. The massive corporations in this country don't want this on the air anywhere. And so the strangulation has been slow and persistent, and it's not stopping. So, now, let me just suggest something. Don't waste your time filling in a petition to get any station to replace the progressive programming that they're dropping, because they don't care. It means absolutely nothing. So, spare yourself the false hope that if you sign a petition on some online petition that goes to one of these Clear Channel radio stations or any radio station that continues the screw tightening on progressive radio, don't kid yourself into thinking it'll have any effect. It does not. It never has. It never will. The goal here is to choke off, absolutely destroy any kind of counter-programming to this corporate capitalist craziness that's going on in this country. And to make sure, by closing off all these radio outlets to progressive or left-wing or liberal, whatever you want to call us, points of view, that'll make it more and more difficult for Democrats to get their ideas out and more definite that the right wing will continue to dominate. Now, this is just the way it is. It's the way it has been since I've been a radio. So every time I get an email from one of these little scum suckers that says, well, if you're so good, why aren't you on 700 stations like Rush? You know, I feel an inclination to answer, and then I think, nah, you know, because these people don't deal in reality. They're not reality-based. They deal in garbage and junk. So I just thought you'd like to know. If you're listening in San Francisco, January 4th, we're gone. But you will be able to hear Glenn Beck. In San Francisco, Chicago, and I think New York, not a single liberal, commercial liberal program on the air. And that's because the market has dictated? Right. Just thought you'd like to know.
If you're not this angry, then you're not paying attention. Back to Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. Now, for people who, you know, in the San Francisco Bay Area, Oakland, and environs who hate to see this program, and Hartman, and who else is included? Going to disappear. You know, you can get the podcasts. You can listen on Sirius XM. You can listen online. You know, as long as we're able to do the program, we'll do the program. And we fully understand what these radio stations, what these conglomerates are doing. Why shouldn't they? That's the way it's played in this country. Oh, you will be able to hear the Molloy Show on an FM high definition station in San Francisco. Mentioned this in his report tonight, but there was a couple of days ago in the Times an article about kids receiving free school lunches. Millions of American school children are getting these free or subsidized meals for the first time as their parents, who, you know, at one time were in, solidly in what we used to consider the middle class, have lost their jobs or lost their homes. And now all of a sudden, the number of students receiving subsidized lunches rose to 21 million last school year. It's going to be worse this year when the figures finally come out. Many, according to Times, a lot of these formerly middle-income parents have pleaded with school officials to keep their enrollment in the subsidized feeding program for their children a secret. They just can't, you know, can't bear to have to deal with this in their communities. And that's perfectly understandable. I mean, this country was not based on the idea of we're all in this together, let's help each other. This country was based first and foremost on genocide, slaughter, slavery, and gimme mine, and to hell with you. I will climb over you. I will stick my feet in your face, if necessary, to get past you in this race to what? So as a result of that, when people finally do hit really hard times, there's no one to turn to. There are social service agencies that the right wing is killing one at a time, underfunding them or defunding them. So who do you turn to? Your church? Oh, okay. Students and families with incomes up to 130% of the poverty level, or that would translate to just under $30,000 a year for a family of four, they're eligible for free school meals. Children in a four-member household with income up to $41,000 qualify for a subsidized lunch priced at 40 cents. There's a county not far from our little studio here in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains, Rockdale County. It's one of the counties that make up Metro Atlanta. It's east of the city. The percentage of students receiving subsidized lunches there is at 63%. 5 years ago, it was 46%. The director of school nutrition for Rockdale County said, quote, "We're seeing people who were never eligible before, never had a need, and now they do." In Silva, North Carolina, layoffs at lumber and paper mills, according to the Times, have driven hundreds of new students into the free lunch program. In Las Vegas, where the collapse of the construction industry caused the chaos out there. 15,000 additional students joined the subsidized lunch program in the fall. In Rochester, New York, unemployed engineers and technicians have signed up their children after the downsizing of Kodak and other companies forced them from their jobs. We're talking about people who are in the $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, $80,000, $90,000 a year income bracket. You know, the middle class. The National School Lunch Act was signed in 1946 to support commodity prices after World War II. Well, you didn't think it was to help hungry kids, did you? That was a byproduct, providing school or food to school children. In Tennessee, the number of students receiving subsidized meal has grown 37% since 2007. The director of school nutrition for the state of Tennessee said, quote, when a factory closes, our school districts see a big increase, end quote. In Roseville, Minnesota, an inner ring St. Paul suburb, the proportion of subsidized school lunches rose to 44% this fall from 29% in 2006-2007. And a spokesman there said there's a lot of hurt in the suburbs. It's the new face of poverty. In New York, school district west of Rochester has lost 700 students since 2007-2008. Families have flooded the area after mass layoffs. But over those same 4 years, the subsidized lunch program has added 125 recipients, many of them belonging to the children of Kodak and Xerox managers who once assumed they had a lifetime job. The supervisor of the meals program there said, quote, parents are signing up children and they're saying, I never thought a program like this would apply to me and my kids, end quote. And in Kansas City, Missouri, Hickman Mills C1 School District. It's a neighborhood where a Home Depot, a shopping mall, and a string of grocery stores have closed. 10 years ago, 48% of the students qualified for subsidized lunches. By 2007, the number decreased to 73%. Last year, it hit 80%. And the school district there started feeding 700 students a third meal after afternoon classes end. The person who runs that program said, quote, this is the neediest period I've seen in my 20-year career. Well, you won't have to hear terrible statistics like that too much longer because right-wing radio is making sure voices that would bring those that information to you are silenced. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Seeing Herman Cain was on the streets of Atlanta trying to sell his endorsement to the other political candidates. Nobody wants it, except maybe Gingrich. Gingrich probably wants it. You know, birds of a feather and all that. But Fox 5 Atlanta, local television station, reported Sunday last night that old Herman was all set to endorse Gingrich today. But Gingrich today is busy. He's kissing the ring. I guess it's the ring. He's kissing something that belongs to Donald Trump. What kind of madness is this? Yeah, Gingrich showed up this morning. Did you see it on television? I had to watch. I was watching MSNBC, and Gingrich gets out of a limo. I didn't see his strange and alien wife with him. By alien, I mean from a different dimension, for Christ's sake. But there he was. He stepped out onto the sidewalk, and the crush of reporters taking pictures of this clown. And he was there to meet Trump. What has Donald Trump become? Is Donald Trump the new kingmaker in American politics? Every single candidate has met with him. And the weird part is all of them are smarter than Trump, even Michelle Bachmann, even Rick Perry, even Herman. But I digress. Herman's out there trying to get Newt to accept his endorsement. And Newt is kind of backing off from that. I can imagine Newt is thinking, no, man, come on. The last thing I need is another adulterous freak joining my team. I mean, I'm number one in that department. I make Clinton look like a piker. But here's, anyway, Herman Cain's staff, spokesperson, what do you call it now? I don't know. Well, that's right. It was somebody from National Journal. He got word from the King campaign that, quote, there's nothing to report. He'll endorse someone tomorrow, today. And ABC, one of their reporters, tweeted a comment from the Kane chief of staff, Mark Block, the cigarette man. Remember him? Cigarette Man said, quote, I have no knowledge that Kane is in endorsing anyone anytime soon. Anyway. So there he is, Herman Cain. Did you watch any of that nonsense over the weekend? Did you see old Herman after he talked to his wife? Oh my God. Where do these Republicans come from? I don't know. Anyway, so it continues now. The new front runner is this horrific example of I don't know yet how to describe Newt. I got so over describing him back in the 90s, for God's sake. 18 years ago, Newt, shut up, sit down, go back to charging stuff at Tiffany's, go hang out with your strange and extra dimensional wife. But my God, you are so not here now. You really are, but go ahead. Go ahead, America's Napoleon. There he goes. All right. He's gone to meet with Trump. Oh, Jesus God. Listen, you might want to keep this in mind. This is from someone named Mark Weaver of WMAL.com. The FBI is now admittedly recording internet talk radio programs over the entire United States. Well, we've been on, you know, we've been recorded. Oh, my God. Ben Birch used to send me emails 10 years ago that the Defense Department was tapping into the streaming of our program. So this is no big deal, but not for us anyway, but probably for other so-called liberals, it's probably unnerving. And what it says, if you call a radio talk show and get on the air, you might be recorded by the FBI. Okay, conservatives too. I mean, you know. The FBI has awarded a $524,927 contract to a Virginia company to record as much radio news and talk programming as it can find on the internet. Boom, boom, boom. Now, the FBI says, oh, no, 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 no. Come on, don't jump to conclusions. We're not playing Big Brother or policing the airwaves. But rather, we're seeking access to what airs as potential evidence. Evidence? Evidence? Evidence for what? The FBI says it is not playing Big Brother by policing the airwaves, but rather seeking access to what airs as potential evidence. Oh, my. And Jude has sent me this, put a little postscript on it. Not that I'm surprised, MM. It's just to see it in print makes me shiver. Yeah, well, WMAL, isn't that the station in Washington, D.C.? I don't know. I don't hang out with radio stuff. What else we got here? Oh, yeah. Newt. One thing Newt is going to have a problem with. See, you get right down to it. Nobody, even those rabid right-winger cares for Newt. Because Newt has a very difficult time playing the I'm a dumbass like you are role that all the Republican candidates have to play in order to satisfy the dumbassery of the Republican base. Republicans are proud of their ignorance, especially the base, the ones that determine in the primaries who's going to be the candidate. Now, some of these potential candidates, or potential nominees, I should say, who've been out there with these half-witted discussions and debates, so-called. Can't you wait for this one with Trump moderating? Oh, Jesus, God. Anyway, most of these candidates don't have to pretend to dumb themselves down to the level, the butt level of their the Republican Party base. They are already dumber than a sack full of dead rats. But Newt prides himself. You see, Newt is an intellectual. Newt used to be a professor, don't you know? Newt will be the first presidential candidate since Woodrow Wilson to have a PhD. Was it Wilson? I think it was. So it's Dr. Gingrich. And his dissertation was on education in the Congo in the 40s and 50s and early 60s. That was his dissertation, in case you are wondering. I read that in the Times over the weekend. I had no idea. But Newt, you see, is not a pointy-headed intellectual. He was not a professor at any of the Ivy League schools, or hell, even the Big Ten schools. Hell, even the Pac-12. Hell, even the SEC or the ACC. No. Newt was a professor at what used to be called West Georgia College. A little, quaint looking little school out here in Carrollton, Georgia, which I now believe has been absorbed into the University of Georgia system. So it's now West Georgia University. But when Newt taught out there, he was small classes, and it was pretty much indoctrination. But Newt has got some disturbing news ahead of him from right here in the Peach State. I'll give that to you when we come back.
Yeah.
Planning, Anger Management. Back to Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. So, again, back to Newt Gingrich, because he is the this week's anointed one in the this clown show that is the Republican nominating process. Huh? Have you ever seen anything like this? I never have. In all the years that I've been paying attention to this stuff, I have never seen a field of potential Republicans so stupid, so clownish, so obscene as this group. And now Newt has poked his head up, kind of like the groundhog in February, sticking his head up, saying, oh, am I casting a shadow? There he is. There's Newt. Of course you are. Of course you are, Newt. So Newt Gingrich now, who is having a difficult time, because Newt likes to see himself as an intellectual. He likes to see himself as a very learned man, as a leader, as a transformational figure, as an historical figure, as someone who I don't know. He's kind of like Moses, even though Herman Cain claimed that title. But Newt has always seen himself as Moses. In a very secular way. Newt has never been religious. Callista, his strange and extra-dimensional wife, got him into the Catholic Church. So now he's in the same perverted cult as is Fat Tony Scalia and Sammy the Fish Alito. And, how many Supreme Court justices now are Catholic? Six? Think about that for a second. Wait till they have a Supreme Court case that tests the whether or not priests have a right to sexually molest children, a constitutional right. Hmm? Ooh. Anyway, back to Newt. Newt is now Catholic. He's now a true believer, which is not going to go over very well in the Protestant Evangelical South. The Protestant Evangelical South, they now have several Catholics and a couple of Mormons to choose from. And this puts an awful lot of pressure on these people. Trust me, I've been living in this swamp for the past almost 40 years, so I can tell you the truth, that evangelical Christians have especially the Dominionist type, have a very difficult time with Mormons and Catholics. Oh my God, do they have a difficult time. But the wink, wink, nudge, nudge is that everybody knows Newt is not really a Catholic. That was one of the demands that Callista made on him, right? He wanted a pretty young wife. Remember what he told his second wife? She's not pretty enough or attractive enough, and she's too fat to be the wife of the president, plus she's got cancer. Remember that? So he's become a Catholic. But there's a group down here other than the evangelical, fire-breathing, hell and damnation Christians that he's going to have a problem with, and those are the gun owners. There's a group here called Georgia Gun Owners. Yes, sir. They are demanding now that Newt apologize to gun owners for his more than two-decade history of supporting gun control. That's right. Newt is a gun control type. In a statement that they released, Ashley R., of Georgia Gun Owners, she released a statement that said, Georgia Gun Owners knows Newt's history of gun control. He represented parts of our state for 20 years. He's been playing both sides of the gun issue as long as we can remember. And it just goes on and on and on. The press release says, take a look at the Marietta, that's Georgia, Daily Journal from September 16th, 1996. I'm telling you, Newt is so last century. The headline is, Gingrich supports gun ban. I remember Newt's betrayal of gun owners back in the 90s like it was yesterday, said D.R. Leonard, the political director of Georgia Gun Owners. D.R. Leonard says, while Newt used the institutional gun lobby as a mouthpiece to convince millions of gun owners nationwide that quote, as long as he is Speaker, no gun control legislation is going to move in committee or on the House floor. Even though he did that, he was working behind the scenes to pass gun control. Oh, my God. Really? He was doing that? Well, as proof, the Georgia gun owners say, in 1996, Newt turned his back on us and voted for the anti-gun Brady campaign's Lautenberg gun ban, which strips the Second Amendment rights of citizens involved in misdemeanor domestic violent charges or temporary protection orders, or in some cases for action as minor as beating a child almost to death. Why would you want to take guns away from people that beat up their spouses or threaten their children or get drunk and wave guns? Why would you want to do that?
Now he wishes that it all did. Best statement proved that when he sees his reflection, he's fulfilled.
Here come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. I'm just thinking about this morning when, right after their sit down, I guess it was after the sit down, when Newt and Donald got out there for the cameras. Did you see any of that? And Donald with his orange skin and Newt with his 5 o'clock shadow. Newt sitting there, just, you know, the Donald's doing all the talking, was doing all the talking, and Newt standing there just kind of with this little boy smirk on his face. Anyway, Newt has trouble down here in Georgia. He does indeed, with a capital G, and that rhymes with G, and that stands for gun. The Georgia gun owners are very upset. In a press release, they said that Gingrich stood shoulder to shoulder with Nancy Pelosi to pass the Criminal Safe Zones Act. Criminal Safe Zones Act. What would that be? Well, that prevents armed citizens from defending themselves in certain, I love the way the gun owners of Georgia puts it, certain arbitrary locations that would be like daycare centers, elementary schools, churches, shopping malls. Those are arbitrary locations. And as the Georgia gun owners say, virtually all Americans know that criminal safe zones don't protect law-abiding citizens, but actually protect the criminals who ignore them. Well, hell yeah. I mean, you know, the Georgia gun owners would arm every kid once that kid reaches the age of 5 and toddles off to kindergarten. Give the little booger a gun. Make sure that little booger knows which end, fires the bullet. And that way the little boogers will be prepared so that when terrorists come advancing on their preschool or their kindergarten, well, the children can all stand up and shoot him dead. I mean, Jesus, what's so hard about that? However, D.R. Leonard, political director of Georgia Gun Owners, said, quote, but the biggest knife that Newt plunged into the back of all Americans and all gun owners who wish to defend themselves and their families was his coming out in support of a national thumbprint database for gun owners. Woo! Oh, my God. Really? Is that what it was, Mr. Half-Ass? The biggest knife that Newt plunged into the back of all Americans was the national database for thumbprints? These people are just goddamn crazy. Crazy! Back in June 1997, Gingrich said, quote, I think we prefer to go to instant check on an immediate basis and try to accelerate implementing instant checks so that you could literally check by thumbprint. Instant check is a much better system than the Brady process, end quote. And because Gingrich said that, this psychotic son of a bitch named D.R. Leonard is now saying, I'm not defending Newt, but this shows you the depth of the craziness here in Georgia. And so much of the country, but especially here in the South. These people are just goddamn insane. I'm talking about the right-wingers. The Republicans. They're mad. You know, when Obama said something about grabbing for their Bibles and guns every time there's some kind of a something gets these psychopaths upset. He was serious. But because Newt Gingrich talked about a thumbprint in order to buy a goddamn street sweeper weapon where you could wipe out 100 people in 5 minutes. A thumbprint? Well, that takes away our Second Amendment rights. So according to this crazy, crazy group down here, Georgia gun owners, the biggest knife that Newt plunged into the back of all Americans, this is the language that they use. And then the statement says, Newt Gingrich is no friend to gun owners. I wish Georgia gun owners had a mountaintop to scream this information from. That's a hell of a sentence, isn't it? Well, Georgia gun owners have lots of mountaintops here in Georgia where they can scream from. Oh, my God. And the statement goes on. We just want like-minded voters in early primary states like Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina to be aware of this. Do, 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 do. And then I love the conclusion here. Newt is trying really hard to play both sides of his Second of the Second Amendment. Both sides. Anyway, it goes on. He's a professional politician, but as the old saying goes, the proof is in the pudding. See what I mean? I mean, this is Bohunkville. It really is, especially Georgia. But anyway, it's in his record, his own words and votes. He is a danger to our Second Amendment rights and privacy. Privacy. Except where it concerns a woman. Now, a woman ain't got no goddamn privacy. Next thing you know, they'll be, you know, getting with their doctors and trying to from their wombs untimely rip those little fetoids in there. So privacy is for gun owners. Privacy is not for women. Now, if it's a woman gun owner, well, then we have to split the difference. You can have privacy about owning your gun, but not privacy about owning your womb. You do understand that, don't you, girls? He's a danger to our Second Amendment rights and privacy. The members of Georgia gun owners know this. We want all Americans to know this. End quote, D.R. Leonard, political director of Georgia gun owners. Now, if you want more information about this, you can contact Ashley. She'd love to hear from you. Ashley.R. Her last name is Rodriguez. Rodriguez. Wait a minute. Rodriguez. Anybody asked to see her papers lately? Rodriguez. That's not Irish. Rodriguez. You can write Ashley at ashley.r@georgiagunowners.com. Jesus God. Oh, my Lord. So because Newt was in favor of a thumbprint when you went to buy a, you know, a weapon with a magazine on it that would hold, oh, I don't know, 44, 45, 50 shots. You know, great big old banana clip down there. Because Newt wanted, I'm not defending him. I think Newt is as big of a crazy person. He's got a different kind of craziness. George Bush was crazy because Dick Cheney drove him crazy. Ronald Reagan was crazy because he thought his whole 8 years of the presidency was a role he was playing in a movie. George Herbert Walker Bush was crazy because he wanted Nazis that he could align himself with, like his dad did. Clinton was crazy because, that's right, because he convinced most of the country that he was a liberal. And he turned out to be just a hard-ass right-winger. But Newt, I mean, out of all these potential candidates, Newt is really the craziest and the most dangerous, in my opinion, because Newt has this image of himself. I think George W. Bush knew he was a dumbass. I think he really did. He kind of touted his dumbassery for the whole country to see. He was proud of being a dumbass. He was, he would take his dumbassery out onto the international stage. He'd go up to Angela Merkel, the leader in Germany, and grab her around the neck. Hey, baby! You know, he would go up to Sarkozy and grab him in the crotch. Here, how's that feel? What are you doing? I mean, George Bush was just a jerk, and he knew it. Newt is a jerk and doesn't know it. Newt is a transformational historical figure. And as he said a few days back, he's a celebrity. That's why he gets $60,000 a pop for his speeches. Paul Krugman's column today, there are two crucial things you need to understand about the current state of American politics. First, given the still dire economic situation, 2012 should be a year of Republican triumph. Second, the GOP may nonetheless snatch defeat from the jaws of victory because Herman Cain was not an accident. Now, what does he mean by that? Well, you have to think about what it takes to be a Republican candidate these days. As Krugman says, you have to denounce big government and high taxes without alienating the older voters who were the key to Republican victories this year, and who, even as they declare their hatred of government, will balk at any hint of cuts to Social Security and Medicare. Right? And you also have to denounce President Obama, who enacted a Republican-designed health care reform act and killed Osama bin Laden. You have to denounce him as a radical socialist who is undermining American security. So what kind of politician can meet these basic Republican requirements? There are only two ways to make the cut. You have to be totally cynical or totally clueless.
The devil bowed his head because he knew that he'd been beat. And he laid that golden fiddle on the ground at Johnny's feet. Johnny said, "Devil, just come on back if you ever want to try again. Because I told you once, you son of a gun, I'm the best there's ever been." And he played, "Found a mountain, run, boy, run. Devil's in the house of the rising sun. A chicken in the bread, better picking out dough. Granny, we don't fight no time."
Before the hour. So, anyways, Krugman is pointing out today, there's only two ways to make the cut to meet the basic Republican Party commitment to, or requirement, I should say, to become the party's nominee to be president. You have to either be totally cynical or be totally clueless. Now, everybody in this race in the Republican side so far has been totally clueless. Newt Gingrich is the only one who's totally cynical. John Huntsman is a little bit cynical, but Newt defines total cynicism. Now, as Krugman points out, Romney embodies the first option, the totally clueless. He's not a stupid man. Cynical. He's not a stupid man. He knows perfectly well that the Obama health reform plan, for instance, is identical to the one Romney introduced in Massachusetts. But Romney goes ahead and denounces Obama's health reform plan, such as it was, as a vast government takeover. That's nothing like what he, Romney, did. It's not a government takeover. It has nothing to do with the government, for Christ's sake, except to require that you buy it from a private company. Anyway, Romney knows how to read a budget, which means that he must know that defense spending has continued to rise under the current administration. Has defense spending in this country ever gone down? And yet Romney stands out there and he pledges to reverse Obama's, quote, massive defense cuts. Massive, not just defense cuts, but massive defense cuts. Romney says he's going to reverse that because Obama has instituted massive defense cuts. Obama has done nothing. Nothing like that at all. In fact, Obama has done just the opposite. But this is where the cynicism. Romney comes in second to Gingrich in cynicism. Both Romney's smarter than Gingrich, for sure. But they are both cynical bastards. They are just, it is disgusting to hear these two. Wouldn't you like to get a cream pie and, never mind. But you know what I'm talking about, don't you? Romney's strategy, according to Krugman, in short, is to pretend that he shares the ignorance and misconceptions of the Republican base. I love that sentence. He isn't a stupid man, Romney, but he seems to play one on television. Well, of course. Of course. Gingrich? Gingrich has some advantages, according to Krugman, that none of the previous challengers had. He's by no means the deep thinker he pretends or he thinks that he is, but he is a glib speaker, even when he has no idea what the hell he's talking about. And Krugman says, "And my sense is that he's also very good at doublethink. That even when he knows what he's saying isn't true, he manages to believe it while he's saying it. And because of that remarkable talent, Newt Gingrich probably will not implode like this chain of clownish halfwits that has preceded him. The Perrys and Paul, Perry and Paul and Bachman and Santorum and on down the line, Herman Cain. The larger point, Krugman says, however, is that whoever finally gets the Republican nomination will be a deeply flawed candidate. And these flaws won't be an accident or the result of bad luck regarding who chose to make a run this time around. The fact that the party is committed to demonstrably false beliefs. And it is the Republican Party. Demonstrably false beliefs means that only fakers or the befuddled can get through the selection process. Of course, as Krugman points out, given the terrible economic picture and the tendency of voters to blame whoever holds the White House for bad times, even a deeply flawed Republican nominee might very well win the presidency. But then what? Huh? The Washington Post quotes an unnamed Republican advisor who compared what happened to Herman Cain when he suddenly found himself leading in the polls to a proverbial tale of the dog who had better not catch that car he's chasing. Something great and awful happened. The dog caught the car. And of course, dogs don't know how to drive cars, so Herman had no idea what to do with what he had captured. Now, the same metaphor, Krugman writes, might apply to the Republican pursuit of the White House next year. Because we're entering into that crazy season, aren't we? If the dog actually catches the car, in other words, the actual job of running the U.S. government, it will have no idea what to do because the realities of government in the 21st century bear no resemblance to the mythology that all ambitious Republican politicians must pretend to believe. And so, what will happen then? What will happen then? This is something we've been talking about in this program for the past, I don't know, 4 or 5 years. Give it to the Republicans. Give all of it to the Republicans. They essentially have pretty much gotten their filthy hands on anyway with their veto power. But turn it all over. And that way we can get on with the absolute ending of our current political economic system and put one in place that makes a little bit of sense. But first comes step one. Give the House, the Senate, and the presidency to the Republicans. And as Krugman says, and then what? Well, trust me, there's an answer, Mr. Krugman. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.